Choose from top-rated self-propelled walk-behind models or time-saving zero-turn riding mowers, all with the latest features to make mowing less of a chore. With Toro's proven durability, you'll get more than a great-looking yard. You'll get a mower you can count on for years to come. Visit Toro.com/local to find a dealer near you.
Prepare for the workforce. Whether you're interested in electronics, diesel mechanics, healthcare, non-destructive testing, or welding, South Louisiana Community College has programs that train students for high-demand, high-wage jobs on campuses across Acadiana, including Opelousas and Ville Platte. Programs are starting soon. Visit www.solacc.edu. That's solacc.edu for South Louisiana Community College.
103.7 The Game has a weekly podcast covering the world of professional wrestling. Cody and Clint drop a new episode every Wednesday. It's the 103.7 The Game 20x20 ProGraps Podcast. 20 minutes on everything happening inside the 20x20 squared circle. Available on demand at 103.7thegame.com, the free 103.7 The Game mobile app, and on the 103.7 The Game podcast feed.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. This is KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette. 1037 The Game, a Delta Media station. Call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. It's time for the 2-minute drill on 1037 The Game, powered by Legends Bar and Grill.
We're rolling.
Continue standing by.
Here's what's making news.
Heartbreak in the nation's capital. The LSU Tigers season came to a disappointing end on Friday night in an 83-60 loss in the Sweet 16. After the game, interim head coach Tony Benford talked about the loss.
First of all, I want to give Coach Izzo and his team a lot of credit. They came out the first half and they established a really good job establishing the paint and especially on the glass. We knew it was going to be a game of who can control the glass, and they did a great job in the first half and throughout the game getting on the glass. Proud of my guys. We've had a great run this year through all adversity we've been through. They accomplished a lot, and I'm really proud of these guys.
Over in Starkville, Antoine Duplantis got past the 300 career hit landmark, becoming the sixth Tiger to do so in program history, and now the Tigers even up the series against Mississippi State with a 10-5 win. LSU will look to take the rubber match this afternoon with first pitch set for 1 o'clock. And you'll hear all the action right here on 103.7 The Game, starting with the pregame show at 12:30. And the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, they drop the opening game of the series against Troy 6-5 after a walk-off sack fly. The Cajuns, they'll look to even up the series tonight with first pitch set for 3 o'clock. And finally, despite 10 strikeouts from Garrett Cole, the Houston Astros dropped one to the Tampa Bay Rays 4-2. Game 3 of the series is tonight with first pitch set for 6:10. And you'll be able to hear all the action over on our sister station, The Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, and 104.1 FM out in Lake Charles. It'll be Colin McHugh on the mound for the Stros, while the Rays, they'll be sending out Taylor Glasnow. For Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, I'm Clint Dumming. If you want more news, opinion, and on-demand audio, all you got to do is head out to 1037thegame.com.
This has been the 2-Minute Drill, powered by Legends, your favorite sports bar and grill, with 9 locations in Acadiana and the best happy hour in town. Cheers. Find them at legendsoflafayette.com. Listening to 103.7 The Game on your Amazon Echo is easy. Just enable the Alexa skill for 103.7 The Game on the Alexa app from your mobile device. Just say, Alexa, ask 103.7 The Game to play live.
It's so easy, anyone can do it.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. This is Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. Streaming live on 1037thegame.com and on the 1037 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator. Cody Shoots. It's the producers on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
And welcome, everyone, to the Must Listen to Saturday Morning Sports Talk Show, the producers, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com, live from the 937 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, presented by Lafayette Roofing, from the roof to the roots of Acadia. They got you covered. Just call 237 Roof, 237-7663. Some good brothers over there. And we got a lot of things to talk about today. And my goodness, we've got baseball to talk about, college baseball, Major League Baseball, and who knows what else we'll get into today. Definitely a lot of things to break down. The Elite Eight, we're getting that much closer to the Final Four. Just some tremendous stuff going on today.
Tigers dropped out last night, but still some tremendous basketball. Both the late games last night went down to the line.
They were way better than they were last night. Thursday night. Much better basketball last night.
Very entertaining games. Duke came away with the victory to punch their ticket to the Elite Eight, and Kentucky outlast Houston, who kind of struggled early in that ball game, but kind of surged late.
It was impressive to see what we saw from that Duke game, and then Auburn beating UNC, like destroying my bracket in a million little tiny pieces.
I think Auburn's still hitting threes. I mean, they were just so hot last
night.
They couldn't miss from the outside, and they just ran with North Carolina. They looked really good last night.
They looked phenomenal last night when you look at the other Sweet 16 matchups that were on tap last night. Like I said, Thursday night, the nightcap games were absolute garbage. At least these games that happened after LSU were incredibly entertaining.
No, but I mean that Tennessee game, Tennessee-Purdue was good on Thursday night.
I mean that wasn't the nightcap. That was like one of the first two games.
Yeah, that was one of the first
two. Like I said, I'm talking about those like late-night ones that you didn't need any Ambien for.
Yeah, it was pretty pop-on. I went to bed, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you got sleepy during that game because it was so damn boring.
But I mean, we could talk about LSU a little bit. They were just outmanned last night. That Michigan State was just better at every facet of the ball game. Izzo just had a great game plan. They stuck to it. They got good looks out of their offense. They were able to run when needed to.
I mean, Aaron Henry was just a beast.
Oh, man. It's like they couldn't miss. And the way they attacked the offensive glass and LSU's inability to rebound the basketball just did them in early on.
Yeah, it was weird to see what was going on the court last night for LSU because they just looked out of sorts. They weren't able to get into any kind of rhythm. But I think that's what happens when you're on the other side of an early run, because it was 8-0 early on. Within 2 minutes of the ball game, you were down 8-0. You had to take a timeout, and it's hard to kind of rebound from that point.
Well, I think they also controlled the pace of the game. Like, LSU wants to play fast. They felt, you know, just uncomfortable all night long, especially in the half court. They didn't really work the ball around. They had bad possessions, throwing up shots at the end of the shot clock, just not getting good looks inside. Tom Izzo, just again, credit him for the game plan to really slow LSU down and keeping them out of their element.
And that was a big reason why they wound up winning the ball game. Michigan State had everything under control. Tom Izzo, I feel like after that motivational speech, if you will, to Aaron Henry, Henry's been on a roll lately. I mean, 20 points last night, I think it was 20 points, 8 boards. He looks really good.
I would love to see all those social justice warriors out there who
yeah.
are all over Tom Izzo.
I think that was why you were disappointed by the fact we were only like a half hour last week, because I know you probably wanted to get in on that.
Yeah, I mean, that was just ridiculous. I think that's kind of what's wrong with society right now. I mean, look, the guy coached him up, and obviously Tom Izzo is a Hall of Fame coach, one of the best to ever do it, honestly. And he gets his guys.
Yeah.
He knows the buttons to push, and you saw it, the way he handled that situation a week ago and the way his team responded last night.
Yeah, it was impressive to see what Michigan State did last night, and now they're going to be facing off against the Duke Blue Devils, who barely got out of there.
I mean, Duke's starting to look kind of suspect a little bit. I mean, that's two games really close they played when they were looking kind of invincible for a while. Zion's playing out of this world, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's super fun to watch and athletic.
But Zion's the only one that's really kind of showing out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I really look for A.J. Barrett to kind of bounce back. I really thought he'd have a big tournament, but I think this is a Michigan State team that's going to be able to play with them. I think they match up extremely well against Duke. I'm kind of excited for that one.
I'm excited for that one as well. Then again, I'm excited for that one more than the other Elite Eight matchups, because Auburn's without their star player after he hurt his knee.
I think everybody would just got penciled in. They were like, man, you know, UNC and Kentucky, and now that, you know, Auburn's, you know, best players out, hurt, injured with the knee injury, and then Auburn just downing UNC.
I think they were already up significantly at that point, and then have that injury happen. That's what kind of makes it lose its luster and gives Kentucky pretty much what seems like on paper a pretty easy road to wind up making it to the Final Four when they take on
potentially Virginia, who like has come out of nowhere to go from losing in the first round last year as a number one seed to a 16 seed for the first time in the history of the tournament, to possibly being a team that could win it all. It's weird.
I don't know. I think Purdue's going to have a big shot to beat them.
Oh, exactly. I think Purdue, you can't count out Purdue, but I feel like all the experts and the numbers say that you're going to wind up seeing Virginia make it to the Final Four, which is really weird to say.
Kind of like what Michigan State did last night. Virginia just forces you to play their style of basketball. They slow it down. They're methodical, kind of almost boring. You know,
high school basketball-esque.
Yeah, you know.
Like, I hate to throw shade on it, but it's like,
it's true, though. That's the kind of that's the brand of basketball they play.
In fact, they play it like there's no shot clock, and they slow that thing down. They drag it out. That way you can wind up, they have a better chance of wind up winning this ball game. But can Purdue wind up like speeding up the game a little bit? Can they be able to take control early and play their own pace of game and wind up rolling?
Well, they were sure able to dictate the pace of play the other night against Texas Tech. They dominated that game from the onslaught.
Tennessee. Yeah, I was about to say Tennessee. Oh, Tennessee almost. Tennessee didn't deserve to win that game. Free throws were absolute poo in that one. And then you wound up like, I mean, Tennessee almost got eliminated by Iowa in the second round after almost going full Atlanta and blowing a 25-point lead in the second half. That was just a rough go of things.
Yeah, they surged back, started making big shots. What did you think about the call at the end of the game, the foul?
And, for which one, Purdue or Iowa?
No, I'm talking about the Purdue game.
Okay.
Tennessee-Purdue. You know, it was close, the call, but I thought the kid stepped out.
Like, I don't know which way to think about it, but I'm going to wind up leaning towards saying that he wound up probably, it was the right call to make late in the game. Because, like I said, you're heat of the moment, and you probably, I don't know why they didn't challenge it, but, you know, you're just looking at everything, and I just think that was probably the wrong decision to make in that case.
Yeah, I really thought the kid stepped out more than anything. That's kind of my argument.
Like I said, at least take some time to just look at it and make sure that you're making the right call in that situation.
Yeah, and I think Purdue is the type of team. Though. Let's go back and talk about the Purdue and Virginia game. I think they are the type of team that can get out and run and force Virginia to be uncomfortable. But Virginia is just so good at controlling it and making you play their pace. Is that kind of how you see that ball game going?
I think that's probably the biggest storyline is about who can control the game, who can control the pace of the game. Because if it's a fast game, I'd want to give the edge to Purdue here.
One thing I think is interesting, though, you shared something with me last night.
Yeah.
And it's the teams that have basically, the most dunks, right?
Yeah, it's a dunk contest, basically, is what March Madness is. And it's amazing to see what's going on with that because I saw this. I'm trying to find it again. But I actually also saw, this is all courtesy of 538. It's really kind of cool stuff. You just spend some time looking at all the March Madness stuff. And basically saying that the NCAA tournament has turned into a dunk contest with like charts and numbers and graphs and everything. So basically they break down like the share of offense from dunks. Like Florida State made the Sweet 16. A lot of the teams that wound up being like with at least 10% of their two-point field goal attempts being dunk attempts. Like, most of them made it to the tournament, and, like, a handful of them made the Sweet 16, and that includes a team of programs like Duke, LSU, Florida State, Auburn, Gonzaga, Virginia. So you got a lot of teams that are now in the Elite Eight that are in there.
But I mean, it kind of equates to also just getting good looks and easy shots, right?
Oh, exactly. I think that's – and also just being able to get those fast break points. Because you see a lot of times, like, with Duke especially, I mean, you had the Zion cam – in the opening round game where he was just like fast break dunk off a turnover. That's how you wind up winning ball games, by having these turnovers. And that's probably one of the biggest numbers for me when you look at last night's game, LSU Michigan State. You know how many turnovers Michigan had? 7.
Wow.
And Tom Izzo after the game said it was like having 0 turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, when you force a team like that not to be able to get out and run, but did you see that off the turnover, the alley that Zion went up and got last night?
Yes.
My goodness.
I mean, dude, like Zion Williamson is not human right now because I mean, you saw him in the opening round, right, where he had that off-balance play. He wound up kind of slipping up and managed to maintain his composure enough to where he was able to make a basket. That was like one of the coolest plays I've ever seen a player do, be it college, high school, or otherwise. just the way that he was able to maintain. He slipped up, but was able to stay standing to get that, to get those points. It was impressive to watch.
He's playing out his mind right now. Yeah. Last night, the block he had that he went up and got from the help side defense, and just looked like it was going to be kissed high off the glass. He just went and swatted that thing into the seats. I mean, his leaping ability and balance, as you mentioned, is just incredible.
Yeah, it's outstanding to see what he can do on the court. But I was bringing up 538 because I want to pull this up just before the show to see kind of what each team has a chance of winning the entire tournament. And Purdue actually has, I believe it was a 41% chance right now of winning the whole thing.
Who's the highest?
Well, I think this thing just glitched out. So, is like Duke's got a 36% chance of winning the tournament. You've got Virginia. Got 31. Well, Purdue's got 21. Sorry, I want to select the wrong thing. So, yeah. Auburn's got 8% now. And Kentucky, they've got a 19%, Gonzaga 17%, and Texas Tech a lowly 7%. So Duke's definitely the thing, the guys that these stats like.
Yeah, I mean, whoever wins out of Duke and Michigan State, in my eyes, is going to be the front runner to win the whole thing.
And it's just, I picked it from the jump. Duke UNC in the final. I'm disappointed that UNC is not in the final, so I think now it leaves a wide open path for Duke to win the national title yet again. And everybody can talk about how they don't like Coach K, and I'm in that number. But, man, it's just frustrating to see that. But before we kind of take a quick commercial break, because we got Scott Rabelais coming up in just a little bit, we got a poll question up on Twitter at 1037thegame. You can check us out over there. Is the SEC a basketball conference right now? 80% no, 20% yes.
I'm going to say no, man. The SEC has been dominant on the gridiron and the baseball diamond, but basketball, I mean, maybe they're getting there. They are starting to spend more
That's
money.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like it's more just the fact that you're making steps towards being a lot more in contention in the conversation of a Sweet 16 or Elite 8. You had four SEC teams can be in the Sweet 16. That's saying something when you look at other conferences like the ACC that brings out like half of them.
I'm going to say that they're not there yet.
But you agree with me that it feels like there's more to it now. Because
right.
You're seeing coaches get fired because of irrelevancy.
Right.
And
look at the hires that they're making in the SEC. They're spending more money on facilities and that sort of thing.
And then you hire a Buffalo coach to replace Avery Johnson, which is weird, but okay.
Hey, man, Buffalo had a dynamite.
So Avery Johnson to the Pelicans, yes or no?
Ah, man, Avery Johnson wants to be in the NBA. That's why he's not at Alabama.
Bring him to the Pelicans. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Scott Rabelais coming up next. Then we got James Yasko, Astros County, Lima Time, and then Brett Hudson at 11:30. To talk some LSU, Mississippi State on the baseball diamond. We'll be back with more on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And, of course, you're listening to the must-listen-to Saturday morning sports talk show, The Producers.
The Producers on 103.7 The Game on a Louisiana Saturday morning. Now, back to the other side of the glass.
Really proud of this team taking a scouting report and adhering to it and figuring out what a team's strengths are. And I thought we attacked them very well. And it's a very good LSU team. Scary the way they can shoot the ball. You got to love Tremont Waters. He made some big plays. And yet I thought first half, I thought we were unbelievable on the boards, and that was the difference in the game.
That was Tom Izzo, proud of the team, but also giving some credit to the LSU Tigers after taking down those Tigers in the Sweet 16. And we're going to hurry on over to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline with some quickness to talk to our guy, Scott Rabelais of The Advocate. What's going on, Scott?
Good morning. How are you guys today?
I am doing fantastic. How about you, Scott? It's definitely a little bit of a somber Saturday morning with everything going on involved in the world of LSU basketball. You had that tough loss last night.
Yes, but I'm still here in Washington, and I'm stuck here in Washington. It's cheaper to stay than to fly home, change my flight and fly home. But the cherry trees are in bloom. It's beautiful here in D.C., so we're going to make the best of it.
Nice. It sounds like a good time right now. But let's look back at the game last night. LSU, Michigan State, and they just got behind the proverbial eight ball early, which is probably a big reason why they wound up taking the loss, because you look at the other two games in the NCAA tournament. They got out strong, and in that second half, kind of swoon happened. I feel like it was weird to see what LSU was up against early on with an 8-0 run, and they had to take a timeout within the opening 2 minutes of the ballgame.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically what they did to Yale at the start of the game. Yale was never able to completely climb over that hump. As I wrote in my column for today's paper, you can't win a game but in the first couple of minutes, but you can lose it. And that was LSU put themselves – the first 2 minutes of the game, it was kind of over in a sense. I mean, because you've just got so much to overcome. I mean, LSU hit Michigan State with a 13-0 run from late in the first half to the start of the second half, and still that cut it to four. They were able to take the lead. State made a couple of baskets. LSU cut it to four again a couple of minutes later. And they just came back with an 11-0 run, and you're subjecting yourself to the other team makes a run. It's just too hard a hill to climb, and especially against a team like Michigan State that was just playing probably their best game of the NCAA tournament. They were hitting the three pointers. They didn't turn the ball over like they did against Minnesota in the second round, and just made it tough for LSU all around. And it was. It's just the way tournament games happen sometimes. You know, LSU was the aggressor in the first two games. In this game, they got behind, and it was the tables were turned on them in just about every regard from the two games they won.
In the SEC tournament, I really feel that Will Wade's absence was a big part of why LSU wasn't able to win that game. But yesterday, I don't think that would have made a difference whatsoever if Will Wade would have been on the bench.
I agree. I think, can you say he would have made this adjustment, he would have, you know, done this motivational thing, you know, to change a basket or two, but State was overwhelming in their ability to, like I said, hit the three-pointer. They had guys making three-pointers who hadn't made any all year. One guy was 4 of 6 for Michigan State. He made 12 three-pointers all season. Michigan State's rebounding, and that's something they've done all year. And that was not something you're going to take them out of completely. So, yeah, would it have been a little closer if Wade had been on the bench? Probably so. I'd say almost definitely so. But, you know, it's being a 17-point loss, and I don't think you would have made that much of a difference. And besides, you have to keep in mind, they're doing a lot of the things that Will wants them to do. They've been in contact with Will Wade throughout this whole suspension. He is not prohibited from talking to Tony Benford and the other guys on his staff. So, you know, a lot of what LSU did is what Will Wade wanted them to do, just maybe not in the same sequence, but a lot of the same thing.
With so much uncertainty surrounding the program right now, how quickly do you think a leaving company go and make moves?
I don't think there's going to be a move unless it's Will Wade's move right away. I mean, you know, the trial he's reportedly subpoenaed to appear in is not until April 22nd, doesn't start until April 22nd in New York. So that's a few more weeks down the road. I genuinely think from what we hear, they would like to find a way to work things out with him and keep him as their coach. I don't know if that's possible. It's certainly, you have to say it's unlikely at this point, but it's not impossible. So I think this can move along for LSU for now in a slow manner. But you're going to it obviously starts to impact recruiting. It starts to impact are other assistants going to stay on his staff if they get opportunities elsewhere because of the uncertainty. And so it can't go on forever. But I could certainly see them going another month or so before they finally decide. But this is far from completely resolved. And there's not going to be an announcement today. Will Wade is fired or anything like that. I firmly believe that's not the case. Anything can happen, but I think they're going to try to work through this, maybe take some slings and arrows, you know nationally, you know. But but they can't fire Will Wade right now because you don't know that anything is going to be proven. A lot of the evidence looks very bad against him, but you don't know for certain that he's going to be proven to be guilty of anything at this point. So I think LSU has to be very careful in that regard as well. It's a tough spot for the LSU administration to be in. I know they don't have any. A lot of Joe Oliva and F. King Alexander don't have a lot of fans out there, and rightly so for a lot of reasons. But it is a difficult spot for them to be in, that they've got to tread carefully in moving forward. And the path forward is not to, like, immediately announce today that they're firing Will Wade. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking as well. Talking right now with Scott Rabley of The Advocate out in Washington, D.C. right now. And just looking at the entire season that was for LSU basketball, it just felt like a magical season from the second that everything got started. Obviously, the passing of Wade Sims and kind of the unity that everybody had throughout the season, them cutting his parents cutting down the nets after winning the SEC regular season title after the win over Vandy. It just felt like everything was going the right way for LSU men's basketball to kind of make it more of a sustainable product. Can you kind of agree with that sentiment?
You know, it was, to quote Charles Dickens, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times for LSU. I mean, yeah, obviously the number one thing is the death of Wade Sims, and it's an utter tragedy, and obviously that's something that, you know, weighed heavily on this team all year. Skylar Mazur just saying Thursday, he said, I've not gotten over it. I'll never get over it. They were so close. And that permeated the whole team. Then you have the Will Wade suspension at the end of the year. And like, kids are very resilient. I mean, young people really are resilient, and they go about their business. And of course, Javonte Smart was suspended at the end of the regular season, and he was able to come back in the SEC tournament. That was back and forth. And there was another Yahoo story talking about his alleged handler, Shannon Foreman, the day before the regional semifinal. So a lot of things, and yet they had the talent, the ability, the coaching, the togetherness to win 28 games, win the SEC regular season title in a year where people said this is the toughest the SEC has been in years. You still got two teams in the final eight from the SEC. A dead SEC team will be in the final four. Won it over Kentucky and Tennessee, and second most wins in a season in program history. There's a lot to be happy about with this season if you're an LSU basketball fan, and yet it's all tainted by the idea of the worry of what will happen next, what does the future hold? Will Wade be able to be the coach? If not, who will they get? Are there going to be NCAA sanctions? Are players going to leave? Are some of the key ones going to stay? You do figure Nas Reed and Tremont Waters are going to leave. But are some of the other key players going to say, you just don't know. I part of me wishes we could fast forward to, September, the start of practice, in the fall and see where they are and who's there to go forward. But, it's hard to enjoy the fruits of the season LSU's had. It's unlike anything I've ever seen, with LSU athletics. It really is.
Scott, thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk to you down the road. You going to be going to Augusta this year?
The spring meeting?
Yeah. I was talking about the Masters.
Oh, the Masters. Oh, I didn't hear you right. Yes, I'll be at, next Monday. I'll be leaving for Augusta, my favorite week of the year. Yes, I will be there.
I'm jealous of you, Scott. Dream, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate you coming on, man.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, that was Scott Rabelais of The Advocate. Of course, I had to just kind of get that in because I wasn't sure if he was going to be all in this year on the world of the Masters, a tradition unlike any other. And by the way, a little segue here with 1037thegame.com. We have a Masters Pick'em Challenge right now up on there. So, hey, go over there, sign up for it, and give us your pick of who's going to wind up winning the Masters. Honestly, I might go Tiger Woods. If there's a fill-in ballot for Craig Perks, I'm going to fill in that. That being said, go to 1037thegame.com, enter in for your chance
to win
some awesome stuff. It's simple.
It's simple. It's easy. I'm already in. So,
if Blake can figure it out, anybody can figure it out. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Back after this, you're listening to Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Now, returning to the only show bringing you weekly appearances from the Coach Foe. Clint may have to step out when he gets here. They really don't like each other. It's the producers on 103.7 The Game.
Kemp dances off a second. Here's the pitch. Breaking ball. And that's pulled down the first baseline and into the right field corner. One run will score. Racing around third. They're going to send him. Altuve racing for third. He'll make it. Brantley's going to get thrown out at third base, though. He's in a pickle between third and second, and they'll tag him out. But he drives in two with that double and puts the Astros up 2-0.
Michael Brantley, where have you been all my life? The dude has just been phenomenal all season long. Well, mind you, we're only two games into the season, but
still,
yeah, I know. We've two of 162 game season, and I'm saying all season long, two – two games is still part of the season, whatever. Anyways, so the Astros 1-1 on the year. Now we're going to move over to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to talk to our guy, James Yasko of the Astros County, AstrosCounty.com and the Lima Time podcast, which, by the way, I know Cody's on here, but Cody did not realize that it was called Lima Time, James.
That's funny. I didn't know he didn't know that either. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, we were talking about it yesterday, how I was going to have you on the show, and he's like, yeah, he, the whole time he thought it was just Lima Time. I thought Alan literally made up Lima Time, but no, it's Lima.
That's so Alan. Classic Alan.
Like I said, it's just the way he said it made it seem like it was not real, but it was real. It was Lima Time podcast. But now we're going to move over to some actual Astros talk. I was bringing up Michael Brantley. Definitely a strong start to his season. If he can stay healthy, can he be like a crucial part of this lineup?
Absolutely, and that's what he was brought in to be. And I mean, if the Astros had made this signing, you know, prior to 2018, you know, there would have been some eyebrows raised because he'd had two pretty major, you know, injury plagued seasons. I guess last year, contract year, and whatnot. You know, Brantley was able to stay healthy and. And he did sort of what everyone has kind of thought Michael Brantley could do all along. So there's no reason to think that I don't know he's going to have two RBIs every game. That'd be cool if he did. But no, he's doing exactly what the Astros brought him in to do.
And then we look at kind of what they did late in the offseason, during spring training, in fact, with Alex Bregman signing him to a $100 million deal. Obviously, not all of it is – it's not a five-year extension. It's like – you get him like you're extending his contract by like 2 years because of arbitration and whatnot. And then obviously the Justin Verlander deal, $66 million. Is it weird seeing the Astros kind of start throwing out money like they are? Because it just doesn't seem like something that the Astros have done in the past.
You know, I mean, the thing that it's important to remember is that even when it was, even when you whispered that you were an Astros fan, like it's not something you said out loud, like you had some sort of like horrible secret that you didn't want. You only mentioned in like the confession booth or you just wrote in your diary that you were an Astros fan. Jim Crane had said, when the time is right, we will spend. And I remember at the time thinking, okay, well, let's see if that ever happens. And he has, and it's not just Bregman and Verlander. You know, it was about a year ago that Altuve signed that massive extension, and he has done exactly what he said he would do, and he needs to get credit for that. So as hard as it was to spend your leisure time watching the Astros from what 2011 to 2014, it's paying off, and Crane is holding up his end of the deal.
With Michael Brantley coming over and looking like he's kind of solidifying that Astros lineup, in your eyes, what's your biggest concern for the Astros in this 2019 season?
It's going to be injuries. You know, I mean, that's the biggest. Everyone that's in the lineup is capable of doing their part and having what could be a historic, you know, a historic offense. But, you know, if Correa vanishes into a puff of smoke or just sprouts like cartoon angel wings and floats on up out of Minute Maid Park, then that's going to be the biggest challenge of the season. So I'm not real worried about any one key part. It's important to remember that Aledmys Diaz was not signed or not traded for to be a starter. Like he's sort of a utility player, and he has not been impressive over the last two games. But as you mentioned, it's 1.2% of a regular season. I did the math this morning. That's less than a quarter of football over the course of a regular NFL season.
Not kind of surprised that Hinch didn't slide Bregman over to short.
No, I mean they didn't do that when, you know, even when Correa was out. You know, maybe a couple of times, but that's not. I mean, it makes sense that you would want to see, because I mean he came up as a shortstop. But that's just not how the Astros have operated for whatever reason.
Any concern on the back end of that starting rotation? I mean, you know, the front two are just so dynamite, but after that, there's no concern for you there?
I mean, there's going to be, yeah, just because it's not, you know, you don't have Lance McCullers, you know, as a fourth starter. You know, that's a really good fourth starter. You know, Peacock has done it before. McHugh has done it before, and Wade Miley had a really good. He apparently made some adjustments last year, and had a really good second half of the season. So, I wish they had Scherzer going in game three. But you know, as far as how the Astros rotation on the back end stacks up against other teams' back ends of the rotation, I like the Astros' chances.
What about Whitley? Any opportunity for him to get called up and join this staff sooner rather than later?
If there is, that would be, I would imagine that would be an injury thing. And, you know, Josh James is in the bullpen. Up until he had a quad injury in spring training, he was kind of penciled in as a possible fifth starter. So, yeah, Whitley's time is coming, but I think it would take something major to see him early in the season as opposed to later.
Talk right now with James Yasko, AstrosCounty.com, and one of the hosts of the Lima Time podcast. Trust me, you need to check this thing out if you love Houston Astros baseball. I know we sure do over here at 103.7 Game. After all, we do cover the Astros right here on 103.7 Game and also on our sister station, The Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, and 104.1 FM out in Lake Charles. That's where the game is going to be tonight when the Astros take on the Tampa Bay Rays. But looking at just the first two games, the pitching has been phenomenal. Garrett Cole last night throws 10 strikeouts, and then you have Justin Verlander. Outside that home run, he looked untouchable in seven innings of work. What can you say about this? Those frontline guys, the first two starters in this rotation, how much confidence does that give you to want to probably take in a lot more of these like three-game series? Because obviously a four-game series is just every now and again.
Yeah, no, I mean, it feels good. And what you hope happens is that McHugh looks, you know, they challenge each other. And, you know, obviously, you know, if you're going to be a Major League Baseball player, you have to have a competitive streak, not just in wanting to beat the other team, but in wanting to do your part for your own team. So ideally what happens is that McHugh sees what happened the last two nights and he gets fired up, and Wade Miley wants to make a good impression in his first start as an Astro, and then Peacock wants to finish out, you know, that five game stretch strong. So it feels good, but it's not unexpected. I mean, it's Garrett Cole's fifth double-digit strikeout, no-walk start as an Astro that was last night. So it's something that you don't necessarily come to expect it, but it's not surprising when it happens.
How do you think A.J. Hinch handles that outfield throughout the season? I mean, they got a bunch of guys that could play multiple positions out there. You still got a DH spot you could play with. How do you think he handles that with those guys?
I think he looks at it on a day-to-day basis. You know, he's able to. One of the benefits of the Astros roster, and I think you'll see Major League Baseball sort of following suit because it's a copycat league. But you don't have a right fielder that you write in that you write their name in permanent marker. You know, it depends who needs a rest. You know, who's a little bit banged up. What kind of flexibility do the different pieces of your roster give you that you can manage the health and the mental side of the game over the course of a pretty long season. So it's that flexibility, and you see the same thing in the bullpen with guys that could go, you know, there's no lefty specialists in with the Astros. You know, it's guys that can give you one, two, you know, three innings if you absolutely need it. So it's all the roster construction is about is flexibility for A.J. Hinch, and he's going to use it to whatever demands that day's game brings.
Couple quick hitters here. Get me who leads the Astros in average home runs, RBIs, and wins for the pitching staff.
Okay, so average is going to be Altuve. He's recovered from that, from the broken freaking kneecap, which sounds like torture. Home runs, I think Bregman leads the team in home runs. You think
it's over 35?
I think Bregman can hit 40 home runs this year. Wow. And that's my bold prediction, that he pops off and he goes for 40. RBIs, I think, is going to be Brantley, just because he's there in the middle of the lineup and he's a contact hitter and guys are going to get on base in front of him. Wins, I think it's going to be Verlander, and strikeouts, I think it's going to be Verlander as well.
All right, Jays, one more here, a little bit of another quick hitter. I know you're probably going to wind up leading Astros in the AL side of things, but I might as well ask you right now, we're two games into the season, why not kind of get your prediction on the World Series? Who do you think is going to be in it?
Big sample size.
based on the extensive knowledge that I have so far, I'm going to go, it's an Astros, I think it's an Astros-Dodgers World Series, and the Astros win in five this time.
Nice. Oh, I would love to see a rematch of these two mind you, it seems easier said than done. If Kershaw can get healthy and get ready to go, that could wind up looming large down the line if Kershaw's not ready to go, at least in the first couple months of the season, right?
I just really like the idea that the World Series, that the season ends with Dodgers fans looking sad in their home stadium. That is a tradition unlike any other that I can 100% get behind. But yeah, if Kershaw's ready to go, then yeah, they're going to be I don't like the Dodgers, but I like baseball. I'm not going to randomly watch a Rangers game just because I'd rather not contribute to the sin of the world. But I'll watch. I enjoy baseball, and the Dodgers are a fun team.
If Bregman, you know, makes true of your prediction and smashes out 40 bombs this year, where does he finish in the AL MVP race?
I think if he hits 40 home runs, he wins it.
Nice.
That'd be impressive, man. James, I can't thank you enough for coming on, my man. We'll talk to you down the road because I feel like it's going to be a great season for the Astros.
Hey, anytime you want, I'm here.
All right, that was James Yasko, AstrosCounty.com contributor and also the host of the Cody, if you're listening, because I know you probably are, be it on radio or with the free mobile app presented by Visit Avery Island, it's the Lima Time Podcast. That means it's not just Lima Time, it's Lima Time Podcast. You search it, you get to it, you're able to listen to the latest episodes with Yasko and everybody's favorite guy full of shenanigans, and that is Patrick McClellan, the guy he's very hit or miss when it comes to getting him on regularly.
He's a funny guy, though.
He's a funny guy. Funny guy. Mind you, I think he worked better with Al Michael.
Two peas in a pod, right?
Oh, I think there were a lot more than peas in a pod. Let's put it that way. Because these guys, like I said, McClellan's a character, bro.
Yeah, man. I checked their podcast out, and he has me rolling quite a bit.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, come back with more, do some buying and selling to wrap up hour number one. You're listening to The Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Your Saturday morning never truly gets started until the producers take over the airwaves.
Like it or not?
Not.
We are taking over.
Now let's get back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Welcome back to The Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, live from the 237 Roof Studios, power, also presented by Lafayette Roofing. It is just some fantastic stuff right now. What a great interview we just had with James Yasko of AstrosCounty.com and the Lima Time Podcast.
Yeah, I'm pretty fired up for some baseball season, man. I enjoy the game of baseball more and more as I get older. I was able to watch a ton of baseball the last couple of days. So,
all right. Yeah.
Hopefully I can continue to watch.
All right, powering the big sports real quick.
For me?
Yeah.
God, college football, college baseball, pro baseball, then NFL football.
No, not even putting basketball in there.
Basketball is both college and then pro after that. Basketball.
Okay.
That's my...
Ha, man, I think that's about where I'm at right now. But mind you, I probably put college and pros... Like college, pro, NFL, both at the top is just undisputed king in my mind. And then I probably wind up putting college basketball because I enjoy that a lot more than the pro game. Because again, the pro game nowadays, it's absolute trash. It's the Golden State Warriors and everybody else. It's very top heavy, and I just don't like the way it is now.
I could probably count on both hands how many NBA games I've watched this year, start to finish.
No, I mean, I'm about the same way as well. I guess I probably put the NBA towards the bottom, but college basketball probably would be like second, would be third.
I didn't get in.
Is college and pro baseball? I'd put second, college basketball third, and then NBA fourth.
I don't hide this. Everybody knows I'm an LSU homer by far. Even with LSU as good as they were this year, I just could not get into college basketball like I have in the past.
Like I said, I'm a little bit younger than you, but like I said, I've always just enjoyed the game of college basketball a lot more, especially March Madness. Like I can tell you right now, last Thursday and Friday, while Ben Love was at the Tap Room and the Louisiana Open Thursday and Friday, I had one screen with all my buttons and all the gimmicks that we play. And then on the other screen right here, I had
Hopefully
March
your boss
Madness.
Isn't listening so you could tell him how you were just kind of messing off all day watching basketball.
I was working. So let's not act like I wasn't working. I'm running the board. Might as well just kind of keep up with what's going on in the world of college basketball. That way we can give updates. And also,
how much baseball did you watch on opening day?
I didn't really watch any on opening day. Okay. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to, but, you know, I usually probably get here about noon, and, well, we don't have cable in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. That's kind of an is-what-it-is type situation.
I understand
that. I wanted to, trust me, but I was like, man, again, I'm still just butthurt about the fact that we don't get it, like, over here, Root, unless you have satellite.
I'm butthurt that you can't catch Root over here. Even if you have the MLB subscription, they black out Houston Astros, even though we can't watch it here.
VPN.
You know.
Just go get a VPN, dude. It's 2019. Get VPNs.
Get up with the times, right?
Yeah, exactly. That way you don't have to worry about the damn blackout. You use a VPN. I'm not going to – this isn't an ad for a VPN website, but I'm just saying go
to you, bye.
Go figure – hit up the Google machine and look up, like, how to get a VPN. Like, a good one, too. Not one of these free ones, but, like, an actual
– So you want me to pay for something?
Yeah, well, okay. Guess what? It pays for itself. Let's put it this way. That way you don't have to worry about the blackouts and all this garbage.
Honestly, the only time
also
I can watch
it, it's
the Astros
a lot more
now is when they're on national TV,
yeah,
and
or,
how many times that happens.
Or Fox Sports South.
Yeah, when they play the Rangers.
That's on Monday.
So Monday they play the
Rangers. They have a series against the Rangers, yeah.
Be able to watch the Astros,
yeah,
you know, for a three-game set.
Yeah. But like I said, one of the biggest things, this is just me having a general complaint just to have it, is opening day and March Madness, the fact that they collide with each other, it's hard for me because when it gets to the Sweet 16, that's what is the most fun. Like, I just absolutely love that stuff. I love the first 2 days are phenomenal. That's the biggest reason why anybody watches college basketball is those first 2 days to see all the upsets go down. Three 12 seeds won this year. But
yeah,
it's just
but
fact,
it was pretty boring, right, when it comes to upsets this year.
For the most
chalk.
Part. For the most part, yeah. Like I said, obviously, there's your Oregons in there. Your Purdue's beating Tennessee. That's it's a 3-2, but it's still an upset.
Yeah, mild. At best.
Yeah, it's still an upset, though. But like I said, I call it a bigger upset than you think because Purdue, like, heading into the tournament, did you think Purdue would want to make it in the Elite Eight?
No.
Exactly.
Losing to Tennessee.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. they not consider that an upset because heading into it, you don't expect them to get to the Elite Eight and, like, do that. Mind you, we've got him RP3. He's a genius right now because he has Michigan State winning the whole thing and he still has a chance. They have the best bracket amongst Delta Media. Can't win anything for it, but, you know, he's definitely got that going for him.
I mean, if they beat Duke, you got to say they're the front runner, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I'm – oh, well, obviously. But then again, nobody – like, I want to know if that guy – have you seen that? Like, there's still one guy that has, like, a perfect bracket. I haven't heard anything about this guy since.
Really?
Yeah. There's a guy – I don't know where he's from, but he still has that perfect bracket intact. But I haven't heard anything if it's actually been, like – dead or not.
This is after the first weekend or this is post?
After the first weekend, dude.
Wow.
Like, after the first weekend was perfect. And I feel like that's enough to get, like, at least $10,000, right? Like, the first.
Man's his money, huh?
Exactly. Like, dude, we got, like, all 16. You got all the Sweet 16, right? That's impressive because you know there's going to be some trip-ups and slip-ups in the tournament.
He had Oregon in there. That's interesting.
He had Oregon in the Sweet 16. I mean, he had three. He picked all those 12 seed upsets. That's impressive. Like, I have to say, like, just doing that alone, if you're able to get, what is it, like 32 games, right? That's impressive, and that deserves a little bit more. Like, just like, there should be levels to it. Like, if you get
to the Sweet 16, you know, you get 10 grand. If you get to the Final Four, we'll give you 100 grand. If you get it all
right,
that's when the million comes in.
Right? Oh, yeah, definitely. That's where it comes in. Because, like, that
I
way
just think of that guy would have bet every single game in Vegas.
Yeah, but the big question is, would he have bet over-under on those nightcap games on Thursday? Oh, no, on Friday, excuse me. No, Thursday, sorry. Forgot what day it was for a second there. But like I said, Thursday night, like, if he put the under on those games, he would have wound up making bank.
Could have been cash and sitting real pretty. Wouldn't have mattered if he'd have kept his,
oh, yeah,
you know, bracket pristine.
Oh, yeah, he probably would have wound up looking pretty nice after that, too. But like I guess it just...
This- So we talked about the big sports. Does you, like hockey, soccer, where does that fit in there for you?
Oh, boy. Hockey's low on the list now, man. Like, back in the day, it was awesome. But now it just – it's the fact that it doesn't get nearly enough coverage anymore. Nowadays, it's just, for the most part, you've got the NBC sports games on NBCSN, and that's it. Like, back in the – because I remember back, like, in the – early 2000s, you had on like the mothership. The Four Letter Network had games going on.
Yeah, hockey's nowhere to be found for me. I'll do a weird thing like after the World Cup where like I'm like, man, soccer's cool. I'm going to start following it. That lasts for like a month.
Well, soccer's on at like 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
And like I said,
I still don't understand it enough.
Mind you, I love me some Man United, but like I said, it's during the time when there's not football going on. I'll watch it. But once football gets started, I'm like, unless Man U's playing like Chelsea or something, I don't care. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Come back with hour number two of the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. Streaming live on 103.7thegame.com and on the 103.7 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator. Cody Shoots. It's the producers on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
Welcome back to hour number two of the producers on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And we've got the Elite Eight going on, getting things going tonight. 5:09 tip-off, Texas Tech, Gonzaga, number three, taking on a number one. Battle of number three, number ones as well. Late night, 7:49 tip, Purdue, Virginia. And then, of course, you've got Auburn, Kentucky tomorrow at 1:20 and Michigan State, Duke at 4:05. And I have to say, you know, this is something me and Cody talked about off air. I was trying to figure out what time this was going to be so we could tell people up front about what was going on with the game on Sunday if LSU did win. Samsonite, we were way off on times.
What time is that game going to be?
It would have been 4:05. We thought it was like it would have been either like 6 o'clock or 8 o'clock. I don't know why.
They move those games up on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have them at night.
So you don't interrupt them at NCIS LA, I guess. No, literally, I think that's why.
They get to bed. They have work, you know.
God friended me needs to air. 60 minutes. We need to air 60 minutes. We have to. It has to be 60 minutes.
Which game are you most looking forward to Elite Eight weekend?
I'm looking forward to Michigan State Duke the most, I feel like, because that one's probably going to be a very interesting ball game because – obviously, Michigan State can be a team that, like, if you try running on them, it's going to fail miserably. We saw that with LSU last night. And, honestly, Purdue, Virginia, like, Virginia, I feel like, should have been out, like, a while ago. Somehow I just feel that they just haven't surprised me that much. They haven't, like, wowed me enough to say, hey, they're going to wind up being a team that could win the whole damn thing.
I'm going to say the same thing as well.
Kentucky-Auburn's the least interesting one of them all, and it's not because of the fact that you got Kentucky-Auburn facing off for a spot in the Final Four. It's because of the fact that you have Auburn star player out for the game now, and that takes a lot of, like, oomph out of it.
Gonzaga-Texas Tech just, I don't know, just doesn't do a whole lot for me.
I'm sorry, but a team that makes 63 points in the Sweet 16 and it's not on a football field, like, get out of here with that mess. Because honestly, Texas Tech could probably make 63 points on the football field and win a ball game, and it looks really nice. It looks like typical Big 12 football. But 63 points in a basketball game in the Sweet 16, like I said, Thursday night was like a prime example why I feel like not everybody loves college basketball, because that was just a boring, boring game.
It was, and it was like that from the start. It's interesting to me, though, even with the injury, Kentucky's only a 4-point favorite against Auburn. And I find it hard to believe that Auburn's going to be able to have success from the outside as much as they did against the Tar Heels.
By the way, quick update. I didn't see this till about like 10 seconds ago. Peyton Plumlee is going to get the start for Mississippi State in that third game of the series. I don't think he was official heading into the day. So, yeah, Peyton Plumlee.
It was TBA.
Taco Bell Anderson?
Yeah.
Surprised.
Well, what's his, you have some stats on him for this?
Yeah, 1-0, 4.26 ERA. He's pitched about 25 and a third, 29 strikeouts, walked 10 batters.
Okay.
But still, Peyton Plumlee. That's, I love alliteration here.
LSU is going to go with Eric Walker.
Of course, like I said, the starting rotation definitely is unchanged, and that's a good thing. But, man, it's just tough to kind of, like, get things going for them because a lot of it has to do with the fact they're, like, they don't have a steady hand now.
I mean, just the injuries have been brutal to the staff. It seems
that's what's hurt them the most. I feel like this season is the injuries to their pen. Like
it looked like Jaden Hill was poised for a big breakout season after the first 2 weeks of the year, and he's down with injury. You don't know if you'll get him back at all this season. I mean, there's been rumors that he may be shut down, and then Landon Marceau just didn't start out like everybody kind of expected.
Well, he also has soreness.
He's also sore. He also had a touch of the stomach flu. So. It's been a lot of weird stuff. I mean, you also got guys like A.J. Labus and Nick Storrs that still hadn't seen any mound time, and Labus won't see any mound time for this entire season. Hopefully, Storrs can make a comeback.
It's just weird right now what we're seeing with LSU. Like,
it looks like they like Costello, too, and he's another guy that's hurt as well.
That's sore. Like, I don't know what's the rash of soreness. I mean, I'm sure we can wind up talking with, like, anybody about this, but, like, how much of this is to do with, like, you shut guys down with a little bit of soreness during, like, fall camp or fall ball, or is it more just because like
it's
of the wear, or is it just the wear and tear of what one's pitching arm over the course of time? Because nowadays, like compared to when we were kids, like now you've got a lot of travel ball going on, like and they're
everybody plays,
and they're emptying the tank like almost all year round, and I think it's just that's going to want to lead to some natural wear and tear. And now it's starting to kind of bite you in the backside. That's what I'm thinking.
I have two theories on it. I think LSU handles things very delicately when it comes to their pitching staffs, and that's why you get a lot of top pitchers to come here. They're known to handle that. Another thing is, though, man, especially in high school baseball, you're not seeing the innings and pitches like you are seeing at the college level. If you're a really good pitcher at the high school level, the bats aren't nearly as good. You're only playing seven-inning games. Yeah. You might have five-inning games if you have 10-run rule.
Yep.
And how many pitches it takes you to get through that if you're a dominant stud at the high school level.
Exactly. I think that's another thing you need to kind of think about. But like I said, I feel like it's also you talk about high school ball, I think a lot of it also has to do with kind of, you're playing almost year-round now with a lot of the USSSA, stuff like that, these select ball type things. That winds up looming large, especially like you do it from when you're a kid and then you grow up. It's like, I feel like the arms are going to be much more gas at this point.
Yeah,
and
you see it a lot with freshman pitchers, especially early on in their career, just arm fatigue.
Yeah,
and I think, like you mentioned, though, another thing is these pitchers, when they're not pitching at that travel ball level, they're probably playing shortstop, third base. You know, they're a stud on their team. They're making throws across the diamond constantly as well when they're not pitching.
Exactly. I mean, we had Daniel Cabrera out there. He's in the outfield, but he can pitch from time to time.
Yeah, from the left side.
He's an emergency guy, though.
Maneri stated that he'd rather not go that direction. But,
like I said,
if we're getting a pinch, I mean, he is a guy.
No, he's a guy that's going to basically like, oh, hey, let's get out of this inning, then just sit back down, buddy. We're not going to
swing the bat, man.
Exactly. Stick to batting, not about pitching. And it's not meant to be a dig at him, but the guy is supposed to be like one of the best hitters. That being said, Antoine Duplantis, I mentioned in the 2-minute drill, 300 hits, sixth in program history. Eddie Furness, obviously, amongst them. How great is that to see Antoine Duplantis do his thing?
Oh, man, he's been terrific at his time at LSU. I mean,
he's starting to get in the groove of it now.
Yeah,
like,
he
had
like
a slump.
He's finding his way a little bit. He did get in a slump, and I was about to mention he's one guy that just hasn't had those big slumps or big lulls in his career at LSU. He went into a little mini slump, but he seems to be bouncing out of it. Eddie Furness, the career hit leader in the SEC and at LSU, was at the game yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jake Mangum and Antoine Duplantis are going, toe-to-toe right now for that hit lead.
Man,
but,
Mangum's in control of that right now.
Yeah, he's banging out hits right now.
Mangum is so good.
It seems like he's been there for, 10 years.
I mean, probably. That's why he's so close to the record at this point. But, we'll talk with Brett Hudson about Mangum and the series so far. Maybe if there's a rally banana in existence somewhere in the new dude. Has he tried out the new dude yet? Because
what's your thoughts on the new dude?
It is amazing. It is probably one of the coolest,
it's badass,
ballparks ever. Like, I'm not going to lie. If only, like, LSU baseball play, like, if only college baseball is a little bit longer of a season, I'd love to see LSU Mississippi State play twice. Once at the Dude, one in the box. Once in the box. And, like, I'd just love to be able to go to Stark Vegas just to enjoy the new Dude. Like, I'd rent out that place. Like, not going to lie. Because I think that's just a cool experience.
Some interesting things happened there, as you said.
Yes. Oh, yeah. People have people have definitely broken the Dude at this point. That's the best part.
It's such a nice ballpark, though.
I mean, you saw my KP Omaha out there on the network Thursday night. They were just like
chilling in left field, man.
They were doing the broadcast from the left field. That was amazing.
It's a beautiful ballpark, and Mississippi State's been, you know, a long time history in college baseball. So,
and they've definitely become they just become so much bigger now because, like, it felt like once they lost, when Canizero got canned,
it felt like Canizero was very close to, like, bringing them, you know, back to the elite level, and they're still finding their way.
Oh no, I think they're just there now. It's like you've got all this talent there. I think that's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the SEC for quite a while.
I agree. It's a huge matchup today.
Especially with Mangum. He's going to be there for another 10 years.
LSU's got to graduate today. Sooner or later. Whoever wins this game today, I know Arkansas has a very good record in the West, but I feel whoever wins today might kind of take control of the SEC West and kind of put their foot in the ground. And if LSU could seem to maybe get hot, I mean, they play very well in these first two games.
It's definitely interesting, and we got to look at them. Obviously, the Cajuns dropped one last night to the Troy Trojans after a walk-off by, of all people, Colton Frank, former LaGrange High.
First hit of his college career
off the first pitch. I'll say this:
absolutely banged that ball too.
The
man.
Dude's been working his ass off. I'm not gonna. I mentioned this on Wednesday during Five Guys, but I feel like just re-mentioning it now in case you weren't up that point of night or you weren't listening. Was, I believe it was Sunday after the loss to App State. It was Colton Frank, Jordan Wiley. I can't remember the third person. After the game, they head towards the cages. I don't notice him going to the Cajuns, but all Cajuns. Blah, there we go. All of a sudden, I'm working on a story. Me and the SID for Cajuns baseball. We were talking. All of a sudden, it's here. Ping, ping, ping. I'm like, I saw somebody was just out like at home plate, just shagging balls out, trying to just get things going. No, they were the batting cages getting things done. Like that's impressive to kind of after a game want to be able to get things going. Especially with your boy Colton Frank, 0-7 to start his career. Kind of, he got thrown in there because of injuries. A ton of injuries for the Cajuns. Like, I think heading into last week, it was like 20% of their roster was injured.
Man.
And that's not what you want for a, like, college baseball program. You know, that's.
Oh, you know, with roster limits and whatnot. It,
like,
it's
with,
tough when you bat
with Major League Baseball, it's a little bit different because you can
somebody up.
Exactly. You can't call anybody up now. And you also got Gunnar Leje. He's no longer going to be a starter, according to what I was able to hear from Anthony Babineaux on Monday.
He's battling, man. He's struggling a little bit with.
And I say it's not as much struggling. It's more about him going longer in innings because he's been a solid hand.
Effective, no, right?
He's been a solid hand.
It's the fatigueness on the arm.
Yeah, it's just he's not able to get it going as a starter. And I like the way they put that. It's like, put him in the bullpen, and he can wind up being really good in that role as well just because of his work ethic. And Gunnar Leje, as a bullpen guy, and my ideal situation is, because you're saying you can't get him past like 4 or 5 innings, have him be a 4-inning bridge guy in case of a situation where, you know, one of the big things I noticed on Sunday, if Gunnar Leje was like healthy enough to be a bridge guy, that could have helped out the Cajuns a lot. Getting out of that early jam that Dalton Horton put him in after 2/3 of an inning got pulled out after going down, I believe it was 2-0 at that point. After opening, they started out the game with strikeout, hit by pitch, walk to load the bases. That's not the way you want to start off a ball game. Sac fly and then an RBI single right after that. Definitely a rough go for Dalton Horton. And if you had a guy like Gunnar Leje to be the oblique handle, basically, if you will, the bridge guy that can wind up going 4 innings to just fill the gap. You don't have to use all of your arms like you may have done in the past. I think that's definitely interesting. But, you know, that's going to be the biggest thing for the Cajuns like this season, is to overcome a lot of these injuries, and it's going to be tough. I mean, Gavin Bourgeois, he's done for the year. You've got Daniel Lougher, who knows when he could wind up being back.
Castle was banged up, and he came back in a big way last night.
Castle's a bit. That's probably one of my favorite guys from this team this year, has been Hunter Castle, without a doubt, because he's been like so consistent like this year. Because I noticed in his first couple of years, he wasn't able to kind of like get it going, be consistent at the plate. Now he's getting it done in the dish really, really well. I think a lot of it has to do with guys like Brendan Brough, Hayden Cantrell coming to his own. I'm disappointed because his hit streak closed out. I think it was about 15 straight games.
He was hot as anybody in the country.
He was phenomenal. And like I said, it came to an end. I mean, he was close to getting towards that record. I believe it was 25-game hit streak is the all-time record held by Blake Trahan, who tied Chris Webb, who did it in 1996.
I mean,
that's a name I didn't know about. I completely forgot about till I got heard it on Sunday.
He was just so hot for you know, it seemed about 2 weeks that he just couldn't miss. He was hitting bombs, driving in,
hitting
runs.
For the cycle.
Yeah.
How impressive was that? Hitting for the cycle.
I mean, it doesn't happen very often.
Like I brought it up to Jordy, and I know Jordy is not as much a baseball guy. He's more of a basketball guy. But in the perspective of this, is like, which is more impressive, like just comparing the sports? You've got obviously hitting for the cycle and a triple-double. Which one's more impressive?
I think hitting for the cycle is more difficult.
Oh, definitely. I think that's what we kind of agreed upon.
I mean, you see cycles happen, you know, maybe what, you know, a few times in an MLB season.
Yeah.
I mean, what Russell Westbrook had, how many triple-doubles in a row?
Like a bajillion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's
I think
no
he's
doubt
just,
about
he's
it.
He's got another triple-double, like yeah. Just now. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Come back with more. You're listening to The Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
The Producers are willing to break down all the rumor and innuendo to get your weekend kickstarted. Chat them up at 337-706-0111. Now back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Welcome back to The Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. From the roof to the roots of Acadiana, just give them a call at 237-ROOF, 237-7663. But if you want to call us up on the Arco Equipment Hotline, you got just a little bit of time left before we get to an interview with Brett Hudson, I'd like to say, the hottest free agent in all of the state of Mississippi, but also he does a lot of great stuff with Matt Wyatt Media. We'll talk to him about LSU Mississippi State, what's going on with the football team right now, maybe a little bit of that, but obviously a lot more about LSU Mississippi State, Jake Mangum, and how much of a beast he's been this season. And, you know, one of the things I just didn't have ready to talk about, but might as well just get your thoughts on it, Blaine, is the Saints this week. Jared Cook, they finally signed him. It took like almost like a month and a half, but they finally signed him.
Huge pickup. I think he's a complete tight end. He's a good inline blocker. He's a guy who could go out and stretch the field a little bit. I think this has been a piece of the Saints offense that's been missing for quite some time. I think he's going to come in. He's going to be dynamite for the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, Kobe Fleener definitely wasn't the answer. Josh Hill sure as hell ain't the answer. Hooman, like, while I love Hooman, wasn't the answer.
I mean,
he's more of a blocker.
Not, right. They're not at the level.
A dual threat tight end, if you will.
He's really good. I was fired up about that pickup of the Saints. His biggest pickup in the offseason, in my opinion, for them.
Oh, without a doubt. I think it definitely is, and it's going to wind up – like, think about how, like, prolific that offense is now. You've got Mike Thomas. You've got Alvin Kamara. You've got Latavius Murray to an extent. Latavius Murray is going to be more your bell cow. At least that's how I hope they use him.
I think it's very similar to what – way they handled Ingram, right?
You would hope so, because I think that would be the ideal situation, is you have...
I still want to see one more wide receiver.
Oh, exactly. But like I said, you've got a lot of talent all around. Like, you could put a wide receiver in there, and I think you probably wind up getting one in the second round. That's
somebody that could take the top off, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Maybe a Tre'Quan Smith develops into
that guy. I think Tre'Quan has that potential to
you
do
know,
so.
Season two, you know, got kind of get his feet wet a little bit.
I mean, now he's gonna have he's gonna get his feet wet a little bit more. I feel like.
Yeah, I think this is gonna be a season.
It's not as much of a crowded house now.
Right.
I think it's gonna be huge for him and his development. I think it's gonna be interesting to see what happens there.
It also takes the pressure, you know, when you get a guy like Cook coming in to the offense, take pressure off of Mike Thomas and can open up things for him a little bit more.
Exactly. It's going to be fun to see what they do this year. Obviously, with everything going on, it just feels like they have set themselves up for so much success offensively. I love what I saw, what I'm seeing right now from the New Orleans Saints and what they're doing with this franchise.
Now, they're setting it up for this to be the year. As we mentioned, they've done that the last couple of years.
They've been all in.
The chips are in the middle of the table, and let's see what happens.
I think at this point it's triple or nothing at this point because let me correct myself. It's double or nothing because last year they got into the playoffs, but it was a season where you weren't expecting it.
Last year?
No, 2 years ago.
Okay.
I'm saying 2 years ago. Last year you were all in.
Yeah.
But 2 years ago you did not expect it. It was like you expected maybe like 8-8, 9-7, something like that at the beginning of the season, right?
That's fair.
And then they wound up surprising everybody with the way they performed, and then you have the Minnesota miracle happen, which everybody kind of laughs at now because, well, Minnesota wound up kind of falling off a cliff real quick, getting whooped in the NFC title game, and then you have them decide, oh, hey, we're going to get Kirk Cousins to be our guy, which was a mistake.
It didn't fare well for him. I think this is the year, though, that the expectations are. I mean, Super Bowl or bust.
Oh, it really is, because you got to imagine, like, Breeze knows his body well enough to know, hey, like, this is probably going to be his last year. I understand he's got that $20 million, but he's probably going to wind up making a Bobby Bonilla type deal, to where he gets paid that out over like X amount of years. It doesn't necessarily, like, it's probably going to still wind up being dead money.
And then you'll be able to have a franchise-friendly contract maybe with Teddy Bridgewater where, you know, you get back in some money to him as well.
Oh, exactly.
Take over.
Well, like I said, I think he's the guy that you want to be the heir to the throne, but it's going to be easier said than done because there's a lot of expectations now for him because everybody expects him to be that guy. But again, you know, I feel he
turned down more money, right? With Miami to
stay
in
New turned
Orleans.
Down more money to stay in New Orleans, but it's only a 1 year contract. Like, you're expecting to get more.
Let's say
Sean Payton notices like somebody in that NFL combine that he likes a lot, and you got to realize, look at that 2020 draft class. It is pretty damn stacked with a lot of really good quarterbacks in the wind. I probably go in pretty highly in the draft. It's a lot more deeper of a draft class. I've talked about it in the past on this show and on 103.7 The Game in general about how I feel like the Saints have missed opportunities on like a really good draft class for quarterbacks. This year is not. Don't even touch that. Last year really wasn't either. It was, as we've learned, it's not that great. But I feel like 2020, it's going to be really, really good because Jalen Hurts is going to be involved in that. A lot of notable guys are going to. Jake Fromm, State Farm.
Yeah.
He's going to be in there. There's a lot of guys out there that you wind up saying, hey, like, you could probably, like, potentially steal, like, a really good quarterback in the middle of the draft.
You know, and, I mean, Sean Payton's that kind of coach.
Sean Payton's the guy that would love to do that. Right. That's the big thing.
Find his guy. But I also think Teddy signing the 1 year deal kind of shows that, you know, that. They're going to have to move money around and figure out a way to sign
him. And they like him enough to keep him around.
And he wants to stay here, so he must see that, you know, the opportunity and the potential for him in New Orleans.
But like I said, it's all about what happens with them this year. And if they make it to the Super Bowl, I think they probably wind up trading up to go get a quarterback if they don't see enough from Bridgewater in, like, fall camp this year or whatever.
It's kind of hard to see, though, man, until you put your feet to the fire and get that game action.
Going to take a quick commercial break. Be back with more on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. You're listening to the producers. And we got Brett Hudson coming up next to talk LSU Mississippi State on the baseball diamond.
Come.
You've heard the host takes all week. Saturday mornings are for the producers. Now back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Yo,
1-2. Duplantis, and that's a great start. A single out in the center field. A solid single by the Tigers right fielder, Antoine Duplantis, and he'll push that average back above 300. Last night, Duplantis was 1-for-3 with a couple of walks, and he's on board here.
And I believe that was actually the one that got him to Mr. 300. You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Let's hurry up and get out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to talk to our guy, Brett Hudson of Matt Wyatt Media. What's going on, man?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
I am doing fantastic on a Saturday morning. Rubber match coming up a little bit earlier than expected. A 1 o'clock first pitch was originally scheduled for 2. Is that largely because of weather could be hitting the area later today?
Yeah, there's a little bit of afternoon thunderstorms supposed to play. They actually did the same thing with a football scrimmage. They had a spring football scrimmage. It was supposed to be in that 11-ish range. They move it up to 9. So we woke up with the Bulldogs this morning. But, yeah, games at 1, there's supposed to be a little afternoon weather coming in. So they're trying to get this thing in before that thing comes down.
Just announced that Peyton Plumlee is going to be on the bump today for the Mississippi State Bulldogs. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, he's an incredibly interesting story. So the last time he pitched for Mississippi State as a starter was 2 years ago. So he was a starter off and on during the 2017 season, the season that ended in the Super Regional in Baton Rouge. Then he had to serve a 365-day NCAA suspension. But he is now back, and he's been a pretty important bullpen piece for the team early on, and then he started taking over in really important midweek games and giving State some strong starts because this team knows how good it is, and they know that they have a chance to host a regional, if not potentially become a top 8 national seed. They're taking those midweek games very seriously for RPI purposes, so they've put a good arm out there, and a few times that's been Peyton Plumlee, and he's performed really well in that regard, and their usual Sunday starter, Keegan James. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been absolute nails. So you wondered if there might come a time that something like this might happen. I personally didn't think it would happen for a couple more weeks, but Coach Monas pulls the trigger for today for a very experienced pitcher, an experienced starter. It's just a matter of if he can do it for the first time against an SEC bat in 2 years.
Obviously, we can talk about the pitching all day, but my goodness, this offense for Mississippi State has been phenomenal. Obviously, Jake Mangum being one of the big highlights of it. What can you say about this offensive kind of explosion they've had all season long and how sustainable it's been?
Yeah, it's a 1-9 lineup. That's what makes me think this is sustainable. Yeah, Jake Mangum is at the top of the lineup, and he's chasing down Eddie Furness's SEC record, but he's supported by guys that are slugging 600 underneath him. The shortstop, Jordan Westberg, the third baseman, Justin Foscue. I mean, Foscue had 2 homers in that Thursday night game against LSU. He's actually hitting homers on a better pace than Brent Rooker was when he won the SEC Triple Crown 2 years ago. That's how good he is power-wise. And Rowdy Jordan is coming out of the slump in left field. I mean, 1-9, they've been incredible all the way through. And they've got a couple of guys that are slumping at the moment, but that's another thing about this team. The bench is so deep. They have 2 catchers that don't really play but are still good bats and can serve as DHs, and they have some genuine DH candidates. So they have, even when they put their starting 9 out there, they still have 3, 4, 5 capable bats on their bench that can come in if someone starts 0-for-2 with 2 Ks. This lineup is just so deep. It's hard to believe they can't put a very good 1-9 out there every single day.
Hey, you were talking about Justin Foscue. If I'm not mistaken, that was the first time he hit 2 home runs in a single game, correct?
Yeah, first time in his life, not even high school, not even summer ball. First time he's gone yard twice in 1 game.
And that's impressive when you look at kind of everything going on with Mississippi State. He's definitely been the – you talked about it. His pace is phenomenal, but nobody's really talking about him. Everybody's kind of hovering around Jake Mangum. But looking just specifically at Mangum and how he's been able to do things, do you think he winds up probably holding that undisputed SEC hitting crown before it's all said and done? Because it feels like, to me, he's got the best shot.
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, if he plays every game until he breaks it, I haven't done
the pace checkup recently, but at one point he was on pace to break it with like 2 weeks left in the regular season. So as long as he does what he normally does and plays every single day, frankly, he can even cool down for a little bit and still be on pace to break that thing at worst in Hoover for the SEC tournament. So it would take him missing games for him to not break Eddie Furness's record at this point.
Throughout the show, Clinton has been kind of talking about the new dude and how awesome it is on TV and pictures. I'm sure that doesn't do it justice. It's just a beautiful place in person.
Man, $68 million. It goes a long way in a college baseball stadium. It truly does. Yeah, the lounges that have made this place unique for so many years. It's the same people doing the same stuff, grilling, drinking, having a good time. Now they just do so in a much more safe, a much more clean environment, and they still have a good time out there. The player amenities underneath the stadium are just ridiculous. A fantastic players lounge with a pool table. They've even got this hitting cage, the Mitch Moreland hitting cage, as you can imagine. And it has this ability where you can like plug yourself into the computer and put yourself in any major league park and start hitting balls, and it'll tell you where that ball would have landed in that major league park. So if a kid comes to Mississippi State and they're a Cardinals fan, they can put themselves in the St. Louis ballpark and they can hit, and it'll show them where that ball would have landed in that stadium in St. Louis. There's just player amenities out the wazoo here. So yeah, the luxury boxes, all that up top, everything for fans is fantastic, but they also took pretty good care of the players underneath too.
Talking right now with him, Brett Hudson of Matt Wyatt Media. The man just covers Mississippi State baseball, all the sports, unlike any other. But, man, like I said, you're talking about all the stuff that's going on with the new dude. You talk about the left field. The left field lofts is absolutely amazing. And also, apparently, I was hearing through the LSU broadcast, I believe it was a couple nights ago, the fact they have a private locker there to where you can BYOB instead of having to buy alcohol at the ballgame. Is that true?
Yes. Every loft, the apartments out in left field, all the lounges, the what used to be the rigs on the outfield, and the people in the Omaha Club up in the luxury suite on the right field line, and the Triple Crown Club down on field level right behind home plate. I think they all have that luxury of lockers where they can store stuff. And, of course, people that have lounges out on the outfield, they can put, like, grills and things like that and decorations and stuff there. But, yes, you can also put your alcoholic beverages there if you so choose. And, yeah, you mentioned the loss. I forgot to earlier. Yeah, the fact that you can live at the baseball stadium for a few months out of the year during the season, it's incredible, and it seems ridiculous, but they've sold things out. So they clearly understand their market, and their market came through for them on that one.
Yeah, you said $65 million. I think it's worth every penny. $68 million worth every single penny right now.
Uh-huh.
Especially with those lofts, because I haven't seen how much they run for, but I can about imagine they run for at least a couple grand, right?
Oh, at least. Yeah, they released the numbers back in the preseason. I don't remember them off the top of my head, but you can buy them for a midweek. You can buy them for a weekend. You can buy them for the entire season. Like the only rule is it can't be your primary address. Like you can't get mail there. But if you wanted to just live somewhere else and then basically have this as like a second condo that you more or less live in between February and the end of May during baseball season, you have that right to do so if you're willing to pay for left field loft, and clearly a lot of people are if those units are sold out.
Not gonna lie, that sounds badass, especially when you think about it. Like you're talking about end of May, whenever the regular season wraps up, but you know you can wind up hosting a regional or even a super regional if you're Mississippi State, who's definitely is right now deserving of one. And that'd be even more awesome. You probably want to make a whole lot extra money on top of that because it wouldn't necessarily be part of the season tickets cost, right?
Absolutely, and that's right. And that's true. There's so many alternate revenue sources built into this thing with the new luxury clubs they have both up top and that Triple Crown Club down on field level. They know they can make a lot of money through this baseball program. And yes, they invested a lot of money into this stadium to make it better and make it nicer and easier for fans and all of that. But
also, it serves as yet another way to generate revenue for athletic department. It doesn't really hide the fact they know that they're one of the poorer athletic departments in the SEC. They know that. They don't really hide from that, but they also know that they can make money through baseball, unlike almost any other program in the SEC and in the nation. So they've maximized their potential in that regard.
You mentioned the football scrimmage being moved up today. How are the Bulldogs looking post Nick Fitzgerald era?
Yeah, it's an interesting competition there. Of course, fans are going to buy into recruiting rankings, so they're all hyped up about Jalen Maiden, the redshirt freshman, and Garrett Schrader, the true freshman. He's an early enrollee, so he's on campus now. But the incumbent, not the quote-unquote incumbent, but the guy who is Nick Fitzgerald's backup, Keaton Thompson, he's still leading that competition right now. And that's going to draw all the eyes. But I think the primary focus should be on the lines of scrimmage, both the offense and the defense. The defense is obvious because when you lose two guys like Jeffrey Simmons and Montez Sweat, who very well could be first-round draft picks, more Montez than Jeffrey. If Jeffrey hadn't torn his ACL, he'd probably be a first-round pick too. But you've got to replace some key pieces on that defensive line. Coach Moorhead said earlier today, it's not a lack of talent, it's just a lack of experience. They're trying to find the guys that can play like they're experienced until they're actually experienced. And Jeffrey Simmons and Montez Sweat's absence. And then on the offensive line, they only lost, I think, two seniors from that group, but they're doing some shuffling around, some to replace the seniors they lost. They're going to move a guard to center, Daryl Williams, and some to move them to positions that are more comfortable and I guess natural fits for them. So they may have technically only lost two or three starters on that offensive line, but they've really got five position battles going on because of all the shuffling. It's not a true plug-and-play situation. So those are battles that might not receive the attention that a quarterback battle is for a multitude of reasons, but I think those are the battles that are ultimately going to decide how good this team is, because this is a line of scrimmage sport. It's a line of scrimmage league, and you got to be strong there. Mississippi State was lucky to be strong there last year, and they need to be strong there this year while they're figuring out what they're going to do on the perimeter with wide receiver play to score points.
Well, the last time that State strolled out a starting quarterback from the great state of Louisiana, it worked out pretty good for him.
Sure did. Yeah, it's a good point. KT is a New Orleans guy. Shouts to Landry Walker. Same for a prominent wide receiver here, Devontae Wop Jason. There's a chance that he has a significantly bigger role on this year's team than he did last year as a freshman. So there might be some Louisiana to Louisiana connections in Mississippi State's passing game future.
Brett, I appreciate you coming on, my man. We'll talk to you down the road.
Happy to help, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Brett Hudson. You can follow him on Twitter at Brett_Hudson, part of Matt Wyatt Media, or as I like to call him personally, just the hottest free agent in all of the state of Mississippi, because the man knows what he's doing and covers Mississippi State Bulldogs athletics unlike any other, man. And they're definitely on a roll right now on the baseball diamond, also on the hardwood in terms of women's basketball. They're doing pretty well as well from that end.
Yeah, they've been doing well. They're still in it, right?
They're still in it. I don't know what they're at right now. They're probably Elite Eight, Final Four.
Yeah, somewhere close to that. But baseball's looking incredibly well.
Yeah. Like, it's just phenomenal what we're seeing right now from them. And then, yeah, it's Elite Eight right now, actually. Sweet 16. They're Mississippi State advanced to the Elite Eight, I guess. I'll look it up. We'll take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Quiet on the set. Can we please have quiet on the set?
Let's get back to the must-listen-to Saturday morning sports show, The Producers, with Blaine, Clint, and Cody on 103.7 The Game.
Let's begin now.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com. And we go have a good day today because, after all, it is Saturday morning. It is pretty darn nice outside. I don't think we're going to get any weather hitting the Acadiana area.
Not so tomorrow, honestly, right? Tomorrow might get a little rain. It's going to get cold again.
Oh, why you had to kind of bring down the
not
vibes like
tomorrow.
That?
Not until tomorrow.
Saturday. Yeah, but I'm saying tomorrow. Day, Saturday's going to be a great day, but I'm saying tomorrow. Like you're also kind of alluding the next week. It's like hopefully this is a long... long con of yours, and you just want to give me an April Fool's joke right about now.
Because
April Fool's is on Monday.
Yeah, it's going to get cool, man. The wind chill's going to be in the high 30s, I think.
Ha, God. Can like Louisiana just get it together and figure out why we just keep being hot and cold, hot and cold?
I don't know. Because this is getting... sinuses would sure like to know what was going on with all this.
Like, just fix it. Like someone just fix what's going on.
Right?
Shut up. Anyways, quick update to the poll question before we kind of get into some pick-ems. 18 votes so far. Is the SEC a basketball conference? And they're going no, but it's a lot closer than you might think. 56% no, 44% yes.
Let's have this conversation in 2 years.
I guess I'm just always going to lean towards saying yes on this because from what I've seen, it's definitely pretty darn good. And also, we were talking about NCAA women's basketball. They're actually in the Elite Eight. That's going to be going on tomorrow. They have several games going on today in the Sweet 16. It was just a little jarring, if you will, to kind of see all of it. It was too much going on inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. That being said, we're talking about the tournament. Might as well get to some of our picks for some of the other ball games coming up tonight and this afternoon and more as well. All right, so we got to start things off looking at the Elite Eight with tonight's matchups. 5 o'clock tip, 5:09, but I'm just going to call it 5 o'clock. Texas Tech and the Zags. Who you got?
I'm going to go with Texas Tech. I mean, their defense was smothering on Thursday night. I think Gonzaga has got my attention, but I'm going to go with Texas Tech here.
The Fighting Pat Mahomes. I gotta lean towards the Zags here. I'm sorry, but man, like, I feel like the Zags are going to wind up kind of throttling them a little bit, especially after what happened on Thursday night where Texas Tech just couldn't get anything done offensively. I like their odds of winning because I feel like Texas Tech isn't going to be able to play like a high-scoring ball game against them. And also, like I said, Texas Tech was playing against a really good defensive team in Michigan, but they were just able to outscore them. Looking over at another matchup later on today, Purdue, Virginia, 7:49 tip. I'm leaning the Cavaliers here just because I feel like Purdue, it's time. The clock is striking midnight on them because they barely got out of the Tennessee game, even though Tennessee deserved to lose because their free throw shooting was absolute garbage. I got to go with Purdue, make it to the Final Four from that end.
Give me Purdue. I think they're going to come in and they're going to force the pace of play that Virginia doesn't want to play at. Virginia's going to play not to lose. Purdue has nothing to lose. They're the Cinderella, as you mentioned. I think they're going to punch their ticket into the Final Four.
Hey, we got to look at 1:20. Auburn, Kentucky, the 5 seed taking on a 2 seed. I'd say Auburn definitely a lot more of the Cinderella, but it feels like they're going to be running out of time, largely because they have a key injury. So give me the Wildcats getting the dub.
I just can't see Auburn being that hot from the outside as they were last night against UNC. So I'm going to go with Kentucky. They're starting to play better and better as the year went on, and they're playing their best basketball right now in the tournament. So I think they make it to the Final Four.
The final matchup in the Elite Eight, Michigan State taking on Duke. The only one that's actually a 2 versus a 1 seed in this whole entire bracket. It's weird. I got to lean towards the Blue Devils getting it done because Zion is just Zion.
Yeah, but they've been playing with fire all tournament long. I'm going to roll with Tom Izzo and the Michigan State Spartans. They showed out last night, and they're going to come in with that, you know, a good game plan against the Blue Devils. Slow down Zion. I don't think you can stop him, but I think Duke's going to finally lose.
All right, last one. Hop it over to tonight. Tampa Bay Rays, Houston Astros, McHugh on the bump. Who you got?
I'm going to go with the Astros. They're just too good, and this lineup's too damn good to keep down 2 games in a row. I think the Astros break out in a big one tonight.
Let's go with a couple of bonus balls as well. Usually go 5. I got time to get in 2 more. I'd probably go with the Astros as well, winning tonight. Rubber game, LSU, Mississippi State. I got to lean Mississippi State here. I feel like the bats are going to be a little bit hotter up against a guy like Eric Walker.
I'm going to lean Mississippi State as well, simply because this game's at the Duke. Tough place to play. Eric Walker's on the bump. He hasn't shown that he could go long distances yet this year, bouncing back from his injury. I'm not sure LSU's offense could stay hot like it has been the last two nights, so I'm going to actually roll with the Mississippi State Bulldogs.
All right, Cajuns-Troy. Can the Cajuns get it done and even up that series in one game apiece? I believe you got Austin Perrin on the bump, who looked really good last week. He's be up in Troy, Alabama. Can he get it done?
They absolutely have to. This game is very pivotal to their season. They got to turn it around, and it's going to start today, as you mentioned. Austin's been very good on the mound. I think the Cajuns find a way to get it done. Troy's not the best the Sun Belt has to offer, so they really need to find a way to win this series.
Exactly. I mean, safe to say, I think most games you need to start winning these because they don't get any easier. Let's put it that way. Mind
you, I think this is pretty much the easiest, you know, the three series to start out the season. So they.
Yeah, I feel like Little Rock was a little bit easier because Little Rock was at the bottom of the barrel.
About the three.
Series. Oh no, I still say Little Rock was the easier one.
I'm just talking about in general altogether.
Okay,
those three series.
Yeah, it is what it is. We're done with the show today. Getting out of here. Have a great rest of your Saturday, everybody. LSU baseball coming up in 30 minutes. Pregame 12:30, first pitch 1 o'clock, right here on 103.7 The Game. Astros baseball over on the Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, and 104.1 FM out in Lake Charles. You'll hear that over there, and trust me, we got all kinds of great stuff coming up the rest of the weekend. Astros are going to be on 103.7 The Game finally on Sunday, thanks to this 3-game set. LSU Mississippi State,
yeah, finally get to catch some Astros on 103.7.
Peace out, everybody.
The show's over.
Oh, yeah. Kick it.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette. 103.7 The Game, a Delta Media station.